This is the parasha, which is famous for the Meraglim, the spies, and the whole episode of the spies going into Eretz Yisrael, scouting out the land of Israel to see to what extent they will have the ability to be able to conquer the land, despite the fact that they were commanded to go in by Hashem. And the story is so famous because this is the story, this is the event which tragically led to the wandering in the desert for 40 years, because the Jewish, because the spies went, they had ahead of every tribe going in to Eretz Yisrael, scouting out the land, and of all the 12 tribes, all the 12 spies, only two of them came back with a positive report, but the other 10 spoke negatively about Eretz Yisrael, and then injected a fear and trepidation and pessimism in the hearts of the Jewish people, which led to the decree of the Jewish people having to wander in the desert for 40 years. So this is a famous story. And the passage is typically highlighted vis-a-vis, and I've spoken about this before in previous years, it's typically highlighted vis-a-vis the topic of bitachon and hishtadlus. Bitachon is trusting in Hashem, is relying upon Hashem, surrendering ourselves into the hands of God. That's one value. And the other value is hishtadlus, which is human effort, putting out effort to achieve our goals. The truth is, both are necessary, and the Torah requires, Hashem wants us to make an effort, to make human effort, but also coupled with bitachon, with trust in Hashem, with trust as well. Now, what the right balance is, it's an ongoing challenge in a personal life, in a people's personal lives. What is the right balance between how much material, physical effort we put into the different pursuits we have in life, panasa, livelihood, health and well-being, all of the different physical facets of life. What is that perfect, what's that magic balance between bitachon of trusting in Hashem, letting Hashem take care of it, and making the right hishtadlus, making the right effort? So it's a big subject, very, very big subject. And and this is typically the parasha which goes into that, which is a good springboard for talking about that, for understanding, really digging into that hashkafic conundrum of what that balance is. Okay, so that's typically what people speak about on this parasha, and I've spoken about it before, and there's plenty of books on it as well. However, the Medrash opens up on the parasha with the following, and we're just going to read through the Medrash and learn the Medrash together. Medrash Rabbah, it's a long piece, but it's a fascinating piece. So the Medrash Rabbah starts off by saying, so halacha, there's a halacha in the Medrash. And this is actually not so typical either. When the Medrash starts off or the Medrash talks, it typically goes right into verses, expositions of verses, and drushas, etc. That's where the word Medrash comes from, drusha. Right, so this is a little bit of an unusual opening for a medrash going into a halacha. Here's the halacha. Mahu, what's the din, says the medrash. What's the halacha with respect to sailing off on a boat, lifrish liyamagodl, to go into the great sea, the big sea, referring to the Mediterranean, that was the sea which was known as the great sea in those days. Are you allowed to go sailing? Are you allowed to go on a boat sailing? Kodem Shabbos shlosh yomim, prior to Shabbos, for 3 days, within 3 days before Shabbos. You're allowed to take a boat ride within 3 days before Shabbos. Right? And this is brought in Shulchan Aruch as well. So the Medrash says, Shana Rebbe Seino, the rabbis taught, Eima fligim besfina b'yamagodl shlosh yom kodem l'Shabbos, b'zman shuholech l'machim rach. A person should not go on a boat within 3 days before Shabbos. Now, let me give a caveat over here. We're not going to discuss halach l'maisa. So this is not the purpose of the class, to go into the halach l'maisa. There's what practical halach. We're not going to discuss the practical halach. We're going to discuss the principle and then see where it then goes vis-a-vis the parsha. So the Medrash says that the halach is that a person should not go on a boat within 3 days before Shabbos to a makom rach, to a distant location, to a distant place. Avol, but in mevakish lifrosh kabo mitzor letzino, if you want to travel from location called mitzor of tzor to tzidon, those two locations, you're allowed to go even on Erev Shabbos. Now, what the commentaries explain is this, is the concern is if a person goes on a boat, and it was more prevalent in those days, goes on a boat within 3 days before Shabbos, the turbulence and the disturbance and the getting used to the wavy water and just getting used to the journey is going to disturb your ability to enjoy Shabbos. That's what they say. That's what the commentaries write over here. It says that as a result of this, the reason for this being that the first 3 days of a nautical journey, one still undergoes physical discomfort due to the unsteady motion of the vessel, and that this will detract from his enjoyment of the Shabbos. After 3 days, however, one becomes used to the ship's fluctuations and no longer feels agitated by them. So that's the principle, right? Within 3 days before Shabbos, you're still not used to it, and then come Shabbos, you're not going to be able to really enjoy Shabbos well enough. But if you're going a short distance from this location called Tzor to Tzidon, that's a short distance, you can go even on Erev Shabbos. Mutar lelifrash afilu be'erev Shabbos, even on Erev Shabbos, b'pnei she'adav yadua, because it's well known that you can travel from between those two different places within 1 day. B'meh devarim amurim. But when are these words applicable? When is this applicable? B'shliach rishus, when you're going for your own personal desire. If you're going for your own personal pleasure on this trip, this is when this restriction applies, that you shouldn't leave within 3 days before Shabbos. But im hoya shaliach mitzvah, but if you're going on the agency of a mitzvah, you're performing a mitzvah in this journey, mutar lo lifrash b'chol yom she'yirtzu, you're allowed to go any day you're allowed to, any day you want to go. You can go even on Erev Shabbos. Even on Erev Shabbos, you can go, even though the Shabbos is going to be disturbed, the enjoyment of the Shabbos is going to be a little bit disturbed because it's not going to take away the turbulence of the waters, but you're allowed to do it anyway. Lama, why? Mipnei shu shliach mitzvah, because you're on the agency of a mitzvah. You're an emissary for a mitzvah. And the rule is, shliach mitzvah, if an emissary of a mitzvah, docha Shabbos, pushes aside Shabbos. Now, hold on, slow down with this. Is docha, it pushes aside the positive mitzvah of onig Shabbos, of delighting in Shabbos. Mm-hmm. God forbid to say that an emissary of a mitzvah can now push aside the negative commandments of Shabbos, for sure not, right? You can't do malacha, a person can't do malacha with the excuse, well, I'm doing a mitzvah. Then we're not saying that. We're talking about the proactive, the mitzvah of enjoying Shabbos. The enjoyment of Shabbos is pushed aside in face of the fact that you're going on the agency of a mitzvah, and therefore you're allowed to go even within 3 days before Shabbos. Shliach mitzvah doches a Shabbos, right? An agent of a mitzvah pushes aside Shabbos, the positive. V'chein atamotz b'sukkah, we had the same thing with respect to the sukkah as well, the laws of a sukkah. The Gemara says, shluchei mitzvah p'turim min a sukkah. People who are on the agency or traveling to do a mitzvah, the Gemara gives the example, you're traveling, for example, during sukkahs, to visit your Rebbe, to give greetings to your Rebbe during Sukkot, then, you know, many circumstances in that type of context would exempt you from the Sukkah in your journey to travel to see your Rebbe to greet him on Sukkot. So this is the rule of Shluchei Mitzvah, that Osig Mitzvah, Potem Min Mitzvah. If you're involved, if you're engaged in one mitzvah, you're exempt from a different mitzvah. And again, we're not going into the details of this. These are the principles. So this is the second principle. The second principle is osik b'mitzvah, someone who's on the agency, a shliach mitzvah, someone who's an emissary to perform a mitzvah, is now exempt from other mitzvahs, exempt from other positive mitzvahs. Not negative. You can't violate negative commandments with this principle. So Medrash continues. She'ein lecha chaviv lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu k'shliach. There's nothing more precious to Hashem than a shliach, than an agent, an emissary, shemishtaleach lasas mitzvah, who's being sent to perform a mitzvah, for no se nafsho, kadesh she'atzliach b'shluchuso, and he puts himself out and sacrifices himself to perform this agency of doing a mitzvah. There's nothing more precious than an agent of a mitzvah to Hashem. An agent of a mitzvah to Hashem is the most precious, precious thing. And that's what the Medrash says. Ve'ein l'cha b'nei adam, shishtalchu lasas mitzvah, and there's no greater example than this. There's no greater example than people who went with this real desire of kavana, pure intent, to go and do the mitzvah of being the emissary for mitzvah. No greater example than this than who? Pinchas and Kalev. Who's Pinchas and Kalev? Right. This is the Haftorah this week. The Haftorah this week is all about the story when the Jewish people were actually on their way to cross over the Jordan, the Yarden River to go into Eretz Israel. So Yehoshua was the leader at that point. Moshe had already passed away. So Joshua, Yehoshua sent Pinchas and Kalev as emissaries, as agents, to go and search out, to check out, to see how to what the situation, what the lay of the land was in crossing over the Yarden. Very similar to our story with the Meraglim in this parasha. The spies, this is already 40 years earlier in our parasha, where the spies are being sent to or going to check out the land. This is repeated, and it's, and again, it's, we read it in the Haftarah as well. It's repeated, except in the repetition of it later on. Yehoshua, Joshua is the next leader. He sends Pinchas and Kalev to go and check out the land, and then they come to the house of Rochav in a city called Yericho in Jericho. When they come over, when right on the edge of the by the river. So the pasuk says, Yishlach Yeshua sent Kalev and Pinchas, and who were they? These were Pinchas and Kalev. V'holchu nos nashon, they sacrifice. They put themselves in danger. It was a very dangerous mission to do this, to put them to go into the enemy territory and to expose themselves to danger. But they did this anyway, and they were successful in their agency. They were successful doing this. And the Medrash goes on to talk about a verse or one word in this whole story, in the story of Yehoshua and Pinchas and Kalev, that when they went into Rochav's house, Rochav was actually a prostitute, and that's where they sought refuge initially. But the pasuk says they went in cheresh, they went in silently. That's what the simple translation. They went very stealthily, secretly sneaking in to go into the city of Yericho. And the pasuk says cheresh, they went in silently, secretly. But the Medrash says that the word cheresh can be read as cheres. Not cheresh, but cheres. Not with a shin, but with a sin. Because the words with a sin, it spells the word cheres, pottery. Yeah. Pottery. Melamed also atzim kadorim, because they disguised themselves as potters, as making pottery and potters. And they would call out, we've got pots to sell. Mishi yirtze yavavayikna, whoever wants to buy a pot should come and buy a pot from us. So they disguise themselves. The Medrash is saying that they disguise them in order not to be exposed to who they really were. They disguise themselves as potters, selling pottery, and that's why the verse says cheresh. Don't read it as cheresh, read it as cheres, which is pottery, and that's the allusion in the pasuk of the fact that they disguise themselves. And the Medrash continues on telling the story about Rochav in Yericho accepting them, but then the king of the land got word of the fact that there was potential spies in Yericho, and he sent messengers, sent soldiers to search out her house to see if they were there, and then she hid them. But then it says she wanted to hide them, but then Pinchas says, "Don't worry, you don't need to hide me. You don't need to hide me because I'm a Kohen, and a Kohen is like a Malach, like an angel, and an angel mevakesh nira mevakesh eina nira." An angel, if he so desires to be invisible, he can be invisible. If he wants to be visible, he can be visible. An angel has the power to make himself invisible. I'm a malach, I'm like an angel, and therefore I'm a Kohen. Pinchas was a Kohen. I'm an angel, therefore I'm like an angel, therefore I can make myself invisible. And therefore he made himself invisible. So when the pasuk says that she hid Kalev and Pinchas, if you look carefully at the wording of the verse, it says she only hid him. She only had to hide Kalev because he wasn't a Kohen. Pinchas made himself invisible, and that made himself completely invisible, and therefore they were not seen. They were not discovered. They were not discovered. Right? The Medrash continues. Lefikach, therefore, that's why he said, I'm a Kohen, and she hid him, etc., etc. Fine. That's the Medrash. So this whole story teaches us. It teaches us kama nosnu shnei tzaddikim elu nashon lasa shlichusam, how much these two righteous people sacrificed themselves to perform the agency of God, to perform the shlichus of Hashem. However, Medrash ends, aval but shluchim sheshalach Moshe, the agents, the emissaries that Moshe sent in our parsha were rishayim, were wicked. We know they're wicked because it says that Hashem said, you know, send them. I'm not telling you to send them. It's not with my my agreement, but send them anyway, right? They're going of their own volition. They're choosing to go, and they're rishon. They're wicked. They're wicked. These are wicked emissaries. So this is a contrast. It's a big medrash over here. comparing the emissary, the messengership, or the shlichus of the meraglim, the spies going in, and the shlichus and the messengership of Pinchas and Kalev. So this is the Medrash. Now it's surprising, really, when you look at the Medrash, it's surprising that such a long elaboration on this whole subject of shlichus, of agency, of the rules of agency, right? The rules that we saw, some very important rules of agency in halacha. The first rule is if a person is doing a mitzvah, if you're on the agency, you're an emissary for performing a mitzvah, you're exempt from another mitzvah. We also saw the idea that the truth is, then it wasn't so clearly emphasized, but you see the idea also, the people who are on the agency to perform a mitzvah are protected. This is another rule of agency of a mitzvah. It's a shluchi mitzvah, einem nezokim. People who are on the agency to perform a mitzvah will not get damaged, will not be hurt. This is a principle. If you're doing a mitzvah, there's such a concept. You're on the agency, you're an emissary to perform a mitzvah, you have a special protection. And that's what happened to Pinchas, and Pinchas was able to vanish himself. Kalev is protected. They're protected on this agency, on this shlichah. Shluchim mitzvah einem nezokim. You also see the idea of how precious the agent of Hashem is. Where's the man? There's nothing more precious to Hashem than a shliach who's being sent to do a mitzvah and gives himself over, sacrifices himself to do his agency. So what's the message of all this? Why is the medrash going in? And this is the opening medrash on the parasha. This is the opening medrash on a parasha where the primary message which people speak about is bitachon, trust in Hashem, heshtadlus, making a human effort in your efforts and your different things you're doing in life. This seems like a bit of an unusual opening for the parasha. So the Sfas Emes says the Medrash is really bothered by something. What's the Medrash bothered by? You see the pasuk. If you look at the pasuk in the beginning of the parasha, it says Yedaba Hashem al Moshe on page 798. V'yedaba Hashem al Moshe leimor. Hashem spoke to Moshe, saying, "Shlach lucha anoshim yisuru es eretz Canaan. Send for you these men to go ahead and to scout out the land of Canaan that I'm giving to you, etc., etc." So we know the story, and we know the story. We know the terrible, report that they brought back, and we know the sin and the ill of what happened. But there's a very basic question: V'yedaba Hashem al Moshe leimor. Hashem said to Moshe, tell them to go. Yeah. Tell them to go. So is it really on their own volition? Were they really going on their own volition? Hashem told them to go. Hashem told, it's true that they wanted to go themselves, but at the end of the day, they were told by HaKadosh Baruch Hu to go. They were told to go, but it ended up becoming a mitzvah.
Once they chose to go, maybe it wasn't ideal. But once they chose to go, they wanted to go, they went to Moshe, they asked to go, then Hashem said, okay, go. He gave them a concession. He gave them a concession to now go.
Now, it's true that the initial motivation to go was purely self-motivated. When it says in the Pasuk, in the second Pasuk, Shlach l'cha anoshim, send for yourselves anoshim. The word l'cha is picked up upon. Rashi says that l'cha, shlach l'cha, send for yourself, l'daitacha, according to your own volition, your own desire, because it was the meraglim, the spies themselves, that they decide we should go. They initiated the entire project. They initiated the entire mission. And that's where fault is found with them, because they shouldn't have initiated it, and they should have had trust in Hashem, to trust that Hashem was going to take them into Eretz Israel, and it will be successful. But they initiated the mission themselves, and therefore they're faulted for that. And that's where a lot of focus is, of the Meforshim, they were faulted for the fact that they didn't trust in Hashem. But after all is said and done, Hashem says, go ahead and do it. He commands them to do it. So it becomes a mitzvah. So was it a mitzvah or not a mitzvah? It became a mitzvah. So the Sfas Emes writes the following. He says that Hashem turned this into a mitzvah. And then they should have now gone in the vein of doing a mitzvah. They should have, once they were given the sanction, once they were given the green light to go, they should have realized once, even though they were motivated by themselves, once they were given the green light, they should have realized now it's a mitzvah. Afki hayotzonu ma'atzmam, even though they were self-motivated initially, mikol makom ata now, shahilehem tziv, now that a commandment came from God, it was now necessary to give themselves over, to nullify their will, to do only that which Hashem commanded, And then they would have been saved. They could have been saved. Had they recognized and read between the lines that now Hashem's telling them to go, they're being given a green light. Once that comes along, once that commandment comes, then they should have realized. They should have realized. Then we now have to act as a shliach. We now have to act completely as a shliach to Hashem, and they would have been saved. But often then the shlichas, that agency, would have been totally 100% fine. And that's why it says in the pasuk, Lema, Hashem told them to go. I told them to go. So it seems like a very subtle concept over here. The point is saying that the whole emphasis of the Medrash over here to talk about shlich, about being an agent to Hashem, the Medrash is discussing this on this parasha over here, which if you zoom out, they motivated themselves. They chose themselves to go. Maybe they shouldn't have chosen to go. But once Hashem then said go, the right attitude then is to then realize and to recognize that even though this act is being motivated by myself, but now that I know it's the right thing to do, I can now turn it into a mitzvah and be completely given over in my agency, in my emissaryship to Hashem. Let me translate this into a little bit more of a kind of practical kind of terms, because the truth is that we find in this parasha, right, together with the Haftorah, three types of messengership, three types of being an emissary, right? One is Yehoshua, and the Medrash about Yehoshua, Pinchas, and Kalev. That's the ideal messengership, where they're being told where the Pinchas and Kalev going was not self motivated. That was purely motivated by Yehoshua. Yehoshua, the prophecy of God, told them that they should go into the Eretz Yisrael and spy it out. Right. So that's the ideal messengership, completely initiated by God. Hashem tells you, do this, and that's what they did. And they're highlighted as being these quintessential shluchim, quintessential agents of Hashem. That's one end of the spectrum. The other end of the spectrum is actually at the end of the whole parasha, the meraglim, the spies. Because after the decree of the 40 years came down, and they were decreed to go to wander in the desert for 40 years, what happened after that? There was a group of them who tried to anyway fight through and go into Eretz Yisrael. And they got killed. They were killed by the Amalekites, and they were completely. There was no endorsement by Hashem with that episode, and that's at the end of the parasha of the Meraglim. They were killed. So that's the other end of where they're completely acting on their own. They're independent actors acting by themselves, doing what they think is the right thing to do. No endorsement. No sanction by Hashem, nothing whatsoever, right? That's the other end. They're not being really an emissary. They're not being really a shluchim. But they think they're being shluchim because we all think we're being shluchim. We all think we're doing the right thing. That's what happens. This is why this is such a relevant message over here, because this maps perfectly to our personal lives, because there are times when we do things which we're commanded by Hashem to do, and there are times when we don't do things which we're commanded. And we're never commanded, and it's wrong to do. It's simply it's plain and simple wrong to do. And then we put some kind of rationale upon our actions and say it's okay to do, it's all right to do, or it's the right thing to do. Rubbish, right? If there's no basis for it, there's no sanctioning from Hashem, no endorsement from Hashem, it's wrong to do. We can't create our own messengership for Hashem. We're not the ones to do that. Hashem has to tell us what the right thing is to do. So they're the two ends of the spectrum. The middle is this parasha over here, the Meraglim. The middle is where it was self-motivated. They initiated the whole camp, the whole mission. But then once they initiated it, then Hashem said, okay, go. Okay, go. So he now endorsed it, go. But make sure you do it, not with your own self-motivations. Turn it into a mitzvah. Now turn it into a mitzvah. So another example of this practically, just a simple example would be, there are many things in our lives which are what's called divrei rishus, optional activities. There are things which are averas, transgressions, and you can't turn a transgression into a mitzvah and say that I'm being an agent to Hashem. That's rubbish. You can certainly turn a mitzvah into a mitzvah because a mitzvah is a mitzvah. So nothing to turn into, you don't have to do anything. So you're putting on tefillin, you're doing a mitzvah, nothing to talk about, you're okay. But the middle ground is the divrei rishus, the optional activities of life, eating and the drinking and the vacations and all of the stuff which is not initially circumscribed by a mitzvah. But if I go and I choose to do it, I get to choose to do this myself. I think this is the right thing to do. I think this is a good thing to do. So where is the line between it being a mitzvah and not being a mitzvah? The line between it being a mitzvah and not being a mitzvah is if I only do this activity purely with my own desire, desire in mind, there's no mitzvah in it. But as soon as if what I'm doing, right, is okay, it's like there's indication that it's not wrong to do, even though I initiated it. So, for example, I'm eating my lunch. I can eat my lunch. There's nothing wrong with eating my lunch as long as it's kosher food, right? And it's I'm making brachas on it. There's nothing wrong with it. There's no indication that it's wrong to do that. So it's okay. So that's sanctioned by Hashem. Sanctioned by Hashem. So now turn it into a mitzvah. Now hold it. Hold on to that and turn it into a mitzvah. It's now turned into a mitzvah. It's sanctioned by Hashem. It's now a mitzvah. So now take your ego, take your desire out of it. Remove the desire, remove the personal interest in that activity and try to elevate that activity into becoming a truly mitzvah. And that's what we're seeing with the Meraglim. The Meraglim, their initial desire to go, wrong, right? Well, whatever. I mean, it was debatable, wrong, yes, wrong. I'm not getting into that, but it was self-motivated. Once it was sanctioned by Hashem, it's now a mitzvah. And they should have then, the mistake which really occurred over here is not recognizing, okay, so we chose to go in ourselves. We chose to do this mission. If Hashem's telling us it's okay, let's make sure that we purify our hearts and purify our minds and purify our whole mission to make sure it fits in with Hashem and not come back with a negative report. Not come back with a negative report. And that's the goal. The goal of our lives is to become pure shluchim to Hashem, pure mind, pure agents to Hashem. So the Sfas Emes, he quotes from his father, the Chidush Arim. He says, in the story, the perfect story of the Shluchim, of Pinchas and Kalev. So we said that they disguise themselves as potters. So you wonder, like, is that so? You know, what's the deeper message of that? So it's a beautiful idea. The idea of being disguised as potters because, right. The idea of being disguised as potters because there's a law, there's a halacha with pottery versus metal and other materials. When it comes to the laws of purity and impurity, so there's a technical rule that a container which comes into contact with something which is ritually impure, it will contaminate it if it touches it on the inside or on the outside. The halacha is a container made out of pottery will only become contaminated by something on the inside, not on the outside. It's a very, very abstract halacha. So that's the difference. But the reason for this is because pottery fundamentally has no value. It's only when it's turned into a vessel. Only when it's turned into a vessel does it have any functionality. But gold and, you know, metal, other metals, they have value. They can be shaped into many different things. And they have value intrinsically. Therefore, those items can become impure by contact on the outside of it. Pottery only becomes impure by something on the inside, an impure entity on the inside of the vessel. The idea is the pottery symbolizes no identity. It symbolizes no self-identity, except only I'm a vessel for something else. I'm only a vessel for Hashem. I'm a vessel. And this was Pinchas and Kalev. In disguising themselves as potters, they wanted to inculcate and remind themselves of that idea. We want to be like pottery. We are agents. We are giving ourselves over completely. We are mevatel ourselves, nullifying ourselves to Hashem, like pottery. And therefore, I read the words, Kevin Shahochel, they went, they needed to be mevatel themselves. I'll actually read it from the English translation over here because he puts it very nicely in this article Medrash over here. It says that to reinforce the idea, the Medrash describes how Joshua's two agents masqueraded as potters in order to obscure the true purpose of their visit. Why they choose this particular craft? When it comes to laws of Tumah, as I said before, laws of Tumah, the clay from which, etc., right? Since the defining aspect of these vessels, the focal point of their value and function is their interior, that is where they are susceptible to Tumah. On their dangerous spying mission to Jericho, Pinchas and Kalev knew that to succeed, they would have to remember that their operation was not about them, but about acting in God's name. To keep this idea before their mind's eye at all times, they chose an occupation for its capacity to remind them that in and of themselves, they are as nothing. Like the pottery utensils taking form on the wheel, their importance and value lay solely in their usefulness to their master, more specifically in their function as reliable instruments of God's will. Right? That's the analogy to the pottery. So this is the picture of what true shlichus of Hashem is. Being a shlich to Hashem, there's an interesting idea, this as it pertains to we're learning tractate Kedushin. There's an interesting halacha that really brings this concept out very powerfully. If you're an agent, let's say a man sends another man, he can do this to be an agent to marry a woman. Let's say they're in a different country, and he sends his friend Reuven sends Shimon across the sea to go and be Mekadesh to marry Rachel because he can't get there right away. So now Shimon is acting as an agent to Reuven, right, to marry her. So he gives her the ring. He can do it in front of two witnesses. He give her the ring and do the whole thing. So the line which the husband typically makes under the chuppah is Hariat Mekudeshes Li. You are hereby betrothed to me with this ring in front of these two witnesses according to the law of Moshe. So you are hereby a betrothed to me. That's the wording. You are hereby betrothed to me. What should a shlich say? Let's say Shimon is the agent for Reuven. What should the words be of Shimon? What should he say? You are hereby betrothed to Reuven. No. Tosa says in Tractate Kedushin on 58b that what he says is Hariyat. He says the same thing. Hariyat Mekudeshes Li. You are hereby betrothed to me. Because as long as he's acting as an agent, there is no separate identity. He is him. Shimon is Reuven. Now, he's not allowed to stay married to him, but he's in this context, he is 100% his agent. He's acting pure 100% as Reuven's agent, and therefore he says, Hariyat Mekudeshes, you are hereby betrothed to me. Because who am I? I'm Reuven. I'm the agent. I'm really Reuven. Therefore, you're betrothed to me. But that concept—that's the concept of being an agent to Hashem. It's negating the ego. It's negating the self-serving desires. And even if there are self-serving desires, that's what we're learning from the Meraglim. When there are self-serving desires, if it's not forbidden in halacha, and it's something which is allowed to be done, then turn it into a mitzvah. Recognize if it's something which now you're doing something, you're engaged in some kind of activity, you're making a personal choice, you're going somewhere, you're going on vacation, you're having dinner somewhere. As long as it's all halachically sound, but it's being self-motivated, then the fact that it's halachically sound means that it's potentially a mitzvah. As long as now, just push aside the self, put aside the, do it for the sake of the mitzvah. Be an agent to Hashem. Be a shliach to Hashem. The parsha this week is called Shlach. That's the name of the parsha. So while everyone else talks about it in terms of bitachon and the shtadlis, what is the name of the parsha? It's about being a shliach to Hashem. That's what it's about. The parsha's name is being a true shliach to Hashem, of pushing aside the ego, pushing aside the self-interest, pushing aside the personal desires. It goes without saying, pushing aside personal desires to go ahead and do things which are blatantly wrong. We're not even discussing that. That was the parsha after the Meraglim, when they got killed and they suffered a lot. They suffered from that. We're talking about situations where technically it's your decision. It's your decision. So make your decision an act of being a shliach to Hashem. Make your personal choices acts of being a shliach to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's what it's about. That's what we're living here for. You know, I have someone that always says to me, I know someone, he says, that's what it's all about. That's his favorite expression. That's what it's all about. Right? Now, he always says that with reference to children and grandchildren and family. So I say that's not what it's all about. There's something bigger than that. That's what it's all about. Is this what it's all about? It's about being a shliach to Hashem, being an agent to Hashem. So may we be zocha to be an agent to Hashem, be a shliach to Hashem. Learn from shlach to become a shliach.